Welcome to the Gottesdienst crowd, where we foster confessional integrity, liturgical preservation, and preaching that doesn't stink. We believe that the historic liturgy of the divine service is more than mere cobwebs of antiquity, but it is a true treasure of the church to be dusted off and brought down from her attic to be enjoyed. So let's get dusting.
Welcome back to the Gottesdienst crowd. This is Jason Broughton. Today we have back with us Heath Curtis. Welcome back, Heath.
Good to be with you, Jason.
So last time you were on, we were going through part one of the importance of being on a team. We talked about going to Winkle, that it's important to hear sermons, to be sharpened by one another for the older members of our ministerium to be spurred on by the zeal of the younger members, and for the younger members to learn patient endurance, things like that. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about this time, things that we've picked up from the manosphere. So maybe just talk about what the manosphere is and what insights can be gained for the ministerium in terms of being on a team.
Sure. So, you know, being a preacher is dealing with people, dealing with human nature, trying to get the word of God to human beings. If you want to just, you know, study theology, so I want to say something like there's being a mathematician and there's being an engineer who actually builds something.
Yeah.
So there's being, you know, a student of theology, but then if you're going to be a preacher, well, you know, this has got to come to the real world. Real people have to hear this. We have to help real individuals put this into practice. We have to deal with real individuals in parish administration. And so this is, you know, part of being a team, right? Every group of people you work with in one sense or another is a team. And every team, and this is where we're going to eventually head, every team has a natural, more or less natural hierarchy that you have to understand it. Mm-hmm. So we stylize these things and in sports, for example, right? You know, the quarterback is the guy who calls the plays, right? The catcher's calling the pitches, which he gets from the manager, which he passes to the pitcher, et cetera. So when it comes to understanding our job in dealing with human beings, in their social setting, where should we look for practical wisdom in this regard? So I might ask it this way, you know, where are you going to seek advice for dealing with people in their social setting and understanding what it would take to lead people, whether it's in your family, in your church or whatever. So men of what profession? Right, do you have any ideas? Who would you ask, Jason Broughton, if you wanted wisdom for dealing with people?
People who deal with people.
Okay, right. So
like, yeah. Managers, leaders in their own fields.
Okay, yeah. So we could look at a business manager, a guy who runs a local grocery store, and I bet he would have some pretty decent insights. I actually like that answer. He could probably tell us a bit about motivating people, but you know, darn it, it for him, it's just work, right? It's just at work, right? Yeah. And for us working in the church, everything we do, you know, reaches down to the core.
Yeah.
And so we see people in the church running after kind of business models, and they always end up with business answers.
Sure.
And it only goes so far. Well, so we want something deeper. So who deals with human nature at a deeper level? What profession do you want to go to?
Well, police officers.
Right, it was cops, right? They got to deal with real people. Problem with cops is they deal with really, really bad people. they're going to perhaps be a little jaded. We're not allowed to tase people in the ministry. let alone shoot them, although many times this seems the most appropriate response to some of the problems we deal with. We're not allowed to go there.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might, so where do you go next? Psychologists? Well, they only deal with crazy people.
Yeah.
Or people who think they're crazy. We might ask other preachers, but again, that's kind of just circling the wagons. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think we need some outside wisdom because preachers, for all of our knowledge, mm-hmm. in some abstract way that we're gaining from, you know, kind of biblical data, like we really know original sin and we really believe it exists. And yet, mm-hmm. preachers tend to be, at least start out, naive, kind men who want to do the right thing. Now, I put it to you, Jason Broughton, that if you really want to know, if you really want to know about human nature, you got to ask somebody who has to live off of their ability to utilize human nature to their benefit. And so I think we should talk to con men.
Oh.
These are the people. These are the people who know the most about human nature.
Yeah.
So I think...
So pickup artists. Again,
this is where I'm heading this particular way. I was going to first suggest maybe you rewatch Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Right. The new one, not the old one, not the, you know, the Rat Pack one, that was not pulled off very well, but the George Clooney one was mm-hmm. amazing.
Yeah.
And there's a host of movies and books. There's actually a Herman Melville novelette called The Confidence Man, which I would encourage you to read. Mm-hmm. I don't say novelette. Yeah.
There's actually a lady who looked at all of the, she wrote a book mm-hmm. about looking at all the different con men and what's nice. Similar to all those things. And she also wrote one about poker. And so that's another avenue.
I want to read these.
Maria Konnikova is her name. I don't remember how to spell it, but the last name starts with a K. Sure. She's Russian. So she grew up in the United States, but her grandma mm-hmm. and her parents were, you know, full blooded speaking Russian at home. Mm-hmm. But she has a number of books, you know, one on, you know, thinking like Sherlock Holmes, one on living like a poker player. And so she lived as a poker player for like a year and a half to.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now I know who you're talking about. Yes. Yeah. I have not read the books, but I watched an interview about the poker business.
Yeah. And she's got one nice. Called like The Con Game or The Confidence Man or something like that.
I need to read that. We should all read that.
Yeah.
So yeah. So because these are the people, they have to live by manipulating human nature. Now we don't want to be manipulative, but we sure do want to be understanding.
Yeah.
And in order to manipulate, you have to understand. Mm-hmm. And so people who are conning people have a really good sense of human nature. So I'm mentioning all of this not only as an introduction, which I hope our listeners will find intriguing, but also as the first of my two caveats about what you and I are going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And the first thing is, I'm going to talk today about things we've learned from con men.
Yeah.
Right. Today we are learning from bad men.
Yeah.
Because we think that actually they know a lot, maybe that we don't know, mm-hmm. and that we had better know.
Yeah.
But this does not mean that we should be bad men. So
is this kind of like our Lord's parable of the unjust steward and be as innocent as doves, but as sly as serpents, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So that's caveat number one. And as you mentioned, you know, here we're getting insights that I think were originally popularized in the wider world by the pickup artists, by the manosphere, you know, whatever. Now, I find it interesting that one of the most famous and truly vile of the pickup artist bros has, you know, in the past couple of years made a very public conversion to his native Eastern Orthodox Christianity and has gone all the other way, but I don't know enough about it to really give an interview on that, but fascinating. Yeah. All right, so the second thing I want to say, my second caveat is the map is not the territory. So this is a statement from Orienteering, right? Mm-hmm. That you have a map, and maps are very useful. Maps can help you get where you need to go, but all the time being out in the woods or just out in the world, you can get yourself really, really lost if you insist on, well, the map has to be right when reality is staring you in the face and right, and the map is wrong. The map is not the territory. The map is, you know, a very detailed map is 1 to 24,000 is a super detailed map. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's, you know, everything is shrunken down. It's, you know, the map is not the territory. Yeah. So I mentioned that because, I mean, I find these insights so persuasive and useful and explanatory, right? It's a theory of human social relations that has a lot of explanatory power. And especially when we deal with something that we find very useful like that, we have to remind ourselves the map is not the territory, right? Yeah. I don't want people to, you know, become intrigued about this, read more about this, and then especially doom themselves by saying, oh, I'm, you know, I fall into this category. Mm-hmm. Of maleness, because in a bit we're going to talk about this map. We're going to talk about this system of categorization. Well, you know, the map is not the territory. Mm-hmm. I think one of the key lessons to take from this is that there's a bit of all these characters, if you will, mm-hmm. in each of us.
Right.
And that a big key to understanding being on part of a team in the ministry or just living your life in general is to understand what role you're supposed to be playing in a given situation.
Yeah.
And whether or not you feel particularly suited to it. And maybe you can avoid a lot of the roles. You know, for example, if you're not a natural leader of men, then probably manager of your local branch office of, you know, State Farm is not the job for you, right? So it's good to have some insight about that. On the other hand, even if you're not a leader of men, and I don't want to, you know, be the branch manager of my local State Farm, if you're married, you still have to be the husband in your house.
Yeah.
And so, okay. So those are my two caveats. We're learning from con men, number one. And number two, the map is not the territory. So in all the animal kingdom, which as you know, Genesis makes clear and Aristotle verifies for us, that we fall into this category as well. I think this is why God has given us the animals. God gave us the animals so we would have Aesop, right? God gave us the animals so that we could see portraits and pictures of ourselves and learn from them and so forth. Mm-hmm. So whether it's wolves or apes or men, there's a hierarchy in every society.
Or lobsters, as Peterson tells us.
Lobsters as well. I did not know this.
Yeah, this is a big Jordan Peterson thing.
That Peterson. I thought you were talking about Dave Peterson. Jordan Peterson. Yeah, so already we're going to get into the characters that we're learning from. Yeah, what a nutcase, right? Turned out to be a real nutcase. I mean, honestly, right? I mean, he's nuts, right? So this is why I started off by saying, you know, maybe psychologists and psychiatrists are not people we want to learn from.
Yeah.
You know, well, we have this phenomenon in the ministry too, right? There are guys who go into the ministry because they're so lost spiritually.
Yeah.
And they think that, and this is common also for cops, you know. I think that's what, as one of your own poets has said, right? Every cop a criminal, every criminal a cop. I think that's in there. Every sinner a saint. I think that's one of your. So Jordan Peterson, I think, is the acme of this. You know, his those are not familiar. He had some internet fame, and his original videos, many of them, I thought were quite good, very interesting. Mm-hmm. But kind of once he got past some key insights that, and he's a good presenter. So a lot of his first, he's a Canadian professor, psychologist and professor. And a lot of his first videos were just his class lectures. Yeah. And he's a good lecturer. You know, they're very, very interesting. Did a lot, I mean, great stuff on like the Gini coefficient and male hierarchies in the inner city and all kinds of good stuff. And then as time goes on, you learn that the crazy look in his eye wasn't an act, and that, you know, his 12 steps or whatever his book was called, 12 steps for living or something.
Yeah.
And the first one is famously clean your room, you know, get some order in your life.
Yeah.
But then somewhere at the top of his list is take your meds. Okay, if you're sitting down to write a book called, you know, here's 12 things to do for your life, and you think it's a really natural thing in your top 12 to include take your psychotropic meds,
yeah,
you're probably taking meds yourself, I bet. And of course, as time goes on, we find out that he really is nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, but he said a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
But I'm going to approach this even, you know, from some other people and kind of, and at this point, now that we're years on to this being popularized, I think it's safe to say that these categories have been, have entered the modern parlance. Okay. And so the alpha male, okay, what does it mean to be the alpha male? Now in before this kind of revolution from the con men, the alpha male was, you know, obviously that phrase was taken from the studies of wolves with the alpha pair, and these are the leaders, and these are the natural leaders of men. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But what the con men have helped us understand is that there's more to it than being, you know, he's the good-looking, confident, you know, quarterback with a cheerleader on his arm.
Right.
That there's something more to this. There's something that they can exploit in at least one of two ways. So the pickup artists are exploiting the alpha male role as a way to be attractive to women. And we'll circle back around to exactly what they're imitating and what they're not imitating. But on the other hand, the confidence men can find a mark in the alpha male, because one thing that alpha males, a trait they have is a lack of introspection.
Mm-hmm.
It's confidence to the max.
Yeah.
So think Donald Trump. There's your alpha male. He has full confidence he's going to win whatever game he plays, and he can't conceive of how someone else might beat him. And right, you know, you see where we're going with this.
Yeah, this is the tragic flaw in all of like Greek poetry.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. Just yeah. So this hubris. Is the alpha's tragic flaw.
Yeah.
Right. Is yeah. Okay. Enough said about that one. People are probably familiar with the concept in general. We'll be able to say more things about them later, but we're gonna fly through these quick. The next one is we're gonna call Bravo. Not beta, because again, in the old parlance, the beta male, you know, indicates, you know, second class, mm-hmm. But that's not what we mean. That's not what we're describing. The Bravo is the alpha's wingman.
Mm-hmm.
He's supporting, the alpha male. He's, you know, the tailback.
Yeah.
He's Gronk to Tom Brady. That's the perfect one that's out there right now. Right. You know, Gronk, you know, supporting him. Tom Brady retires. He retires. Tom Brady comes back. He comes back. You know, he's this guy. And note how there are plenty of things where you can watch videos and stories about Tom Brady. Very serious guy. Right. Crazy diet, crazy exercise program, crazy ex-wife. But the Gronk is happy.
Yeah.
You've never seen the guy not smiling. Okay, there's the Bravo.
Yeah.
He's loyal to the alpha. He supports his alpha, and he is happy to be here. Now, of course, everybody in the NFL is sharing a lot of alpha tendencies, so let's bring this back to kind of the world that we live in. You know, a great setup is to have a couple of natural Bravos on your board of elders,
mm-hmm.
Right? Because the thing that makes a Bravo tick is loyalty based on real esteem, right? That the Bravo has an esteem and a like for the alpha male. He recognizes something in that guy that he aspires to, and he's going to support him and again, the tropes from the TV shows. So there's, you know, there's the, well, I don't, did you watch all the Stranger Things? Are you that in tune with
it? I'm really? Not.
Really? They're in Tuscola. They don't get Netflix?
No, you know, they have it. We just don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You're too poor.
No, just haven't done it.
Okay. Well, in the latest rendition, the bad guys, and again, the show is having a lot of fun with being about the 80s and doing 80s tropes from 80s teen movies. Mm-hmm. And the bad guys in the last round, it was the captain of the basketball team. And you can just, even though you haven't seen it, Jason, you can envision the scene, right, where the bad guy is confronting one of our good guys, and he's the alpha male bully. And then in wing formation behind him, right?
Yes.
On each side of him are two guys. There's the picture of the alpha and the bravos.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next one, we're gonna skip gamma for a minute. And we're going to go to Delta. Delta is Jimmy Stewart in every movie he ever played in, right? Delta is the everyman, right? Delta is the guy who he's striving. He defines himself. If the alpha is defined by confidence and the beta is defined by loyalty and aspiration, mm-hmm. then the Delta, I guess we'd say, is defined by hard work or mm-hmm. finding purpose in hard work. So again, Jimmy Stewart in every show he was ever in, he's not incredibly good looking, but he's not deformed, mm-hmm. right? He's a normal guy. And so he has normal talents.
Yeah,
he's not the smartest guy in the room. He's not the toughest guy in the room. He's not the bravest guy in the room. But by golly, when the Japs come over the sand dune, he's going to fix bayonets and stop the charge.
Yeah.
Right. That's the Delta. And by definition, right, the definitions we're using, remembering the map is not the territory, Deltas are the vast majority of men in the vast majority of situations.
Yeah.
You're called to be this guy. You're called to be the everyman.
Yeah.
Who's going to find purpose in his work. Okay. So, and we also want to say that even amongst the con men, these first three that we're talking about, the Alpha, the Bravo, the Delta, these are not, we're with Nietzsche here. We're beyond good and evil.
Yeah.
These are not good or evil. This is how human nature, mm-hmm. this is how a hierarchy works.
Yes.
Right? There has to be mm-hmm. a hierarchy.
Seems like it's like finding your place within it.
For
sure. Depending on that situation.
For sure. Yeah, finding out who you are. So already we can begin to see, at work, it might be my job to be a Bravo. Mm-hmm. There's my, I got my boss and I want him to have my back. I got to have his back. I can see why he's the boss and I'm not. There are some things that maybe I can aspire to in what he's doing. And I need to support him. I need to, in this position, be defined by loyalty. But at home, I have to be the leader of my family.
Right.
So even if that role doesn't come naturally to me. And so now, again, remembering all the caveats, we can begin to see how this is really helpful in us understanding the Christian doctrine of vocation, mm-hmm. right? That I've been placed in a certain position and I've got to fill this role, right? If God has placed me in this role, I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And, one way or the other. And, okay, already I want to say something about the main thing we can learn from the confidence men is, and so the pickup artist version of the confidence men, what they look at human nature, they look at these hierarchies, they see the alpha male and they think, well, I, as a con man, who by definition is very self-aware because yeah. I'm creating a persona, how can I be that guy? Because I'm not Tom Brady.
Right.
I'm not the quarterback of the team, but how can I get what he has? So in other words, the con man is asking, how can I pretend to be him? Mm-hmm. And so now we have, another great movie about this is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. When was the last time you watched that great hit from?
That had to have been late 80s, early 90s, last time I saw it.
Yeah, we just rewatched it with the kids, and it's great. It holds up great. Very, very good. And, you know, it's silly. It's, you know, like you said, a 90-minute 1989 low-budget comedy, but with high-class people. It's Michael Caine and Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And
I just remember Steve Martin stabbing himself in the eye.
Yes. Fork. And of course, that's what everybody remembers. And that's what I remembered. And it's like a 5-minute chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
Is all the Ruprecht is. But the rest of it is a great little study of the con man, and specifically the pickup artist con man. Because, okay, so what's he doing? Well, why are the ladies attracted to the alpha male? And here's a way that I've worked part of this actually into one of my speeches that I do for churches. It's a long story. Mm-hmm. But I'll ask this question. Let's see, you know, how many of you guys were the guys who in high school, you know, wrote bad poetry for the girls and bought them flowers and candy, and you just could, and you were always a gentleman, and you could not understand why Biff, the jerk on the football team, you know, never sat home alone on Friday night, and you often did, right?
Yes.
And this is the mystery that the con men are out to figure out. And what they figured out was, well, what the ladies are attracted to is confidence.
Yeah.
Now, I think now at this point, let's step away from the con men and ask, well, why is that? You know, because again, the confidence men, the particular confidence men of the pickup artist, they're not concerned about the virtues of the ladies that they want to attract. So obviously they're looking to attract ladies of low moral standing, but they end up casting a wider net. You know, there's something, you know, very, very deep that's going on here about in human nature, about the relationship between men and women. And I think the best way to state it is what women, you know, we think what does the Bible show us about men and women? Ephesians 5, man's to be the head of the household. Mm-hmm. He's to protect and keep the woman, provide for her, and so forth. So I think we can sum all that up with competence for these tasks.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a young lady, how do you find a competent man, right? And how are you going to do that? You can't see competence, mm-hmm. at least not all the most important competence. So you could see, you know, if we're living in an agricultural society, you can see that, you know, Jim can plow a straight furrow. Well, that's going to come in handy. You can see that Sam is a really hard worker. You can see that, but that's not enough, is it? Mm-mm. And likewise, if you're in a warrior society, you can see that Achilles can, you know, is really good at cutting people up, but that's actually not all you need in a husband, is it?
No.
Right. You need this. And so confidence is a visible proxy for competence. And so, because in a natural state of affairs, if you've worked hard to become a competent man, mm-hmm. how do you act? Confident.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever the situation.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so this is what the con men figured out. Aha. I don't have to be competent. I can just act confident. Mm. And I can just, this is how you imitate the alpha. This is how you become a pickup artist.
And so whereas the alpha actually has the competence, the con man is just pretending.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. Fake it till you make it. And when all you want is a notch on your bedpost, you don't have to fake it for very long, do you?
No.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So this is right. We're learning things from bad men. That's their goal. But for us, we can take this and learn a whole lot from it. Right. So for example, part of your experience as a preacher is going to be, you know, leading your congregation. You have to lead it with confidence, mm-hmm. right? Even if, you know, what are some of the problems that preachers are going to come up for them they don't feel particularly confident about? I mean, there's a whole host of them.
Yeah.
Alas, you're not only going to be asked to preach the gospel to preach long gospel sermons. You're going to have to lead a meeting. You're going to have to be with a family who's in a really difficult spot where they need to make a decision. They don't know what to do. You're going to have, you know, the church is going to have problems with finances. You're going to have to, you know, the trustees are going to want to know what you think about, you know, this building project, you know, top to bottom.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to, in all those situations, you're going to have to find a way to, you know, be realistic. I mean, we don't want you to be a confidence man. We don't want you to pretend that you have competence in all these areas. But, you know, after doing your due diligence, you know, a decision does have to be made. And in most congregations, that takes pastoral, you know, the pastor is going to be a part of that decision. So, like, again, let's just make it something really neutral, like a building project. Mm-hmm. Do we build the building here or there? Should it be 2,000 square feet or 2,200 square feet? Should it have a multi-purpose room or a gym? Should it have, you know, whatever? A decision is made, and now it's your job as the pastor to communicate this decision. You know, leadership's made this decision. You need to communicate it to the rest of the congregation, and you need people to get behind it. We need to pay for this building. We need to, right? So now here's where you need to learn that what you need to project is confidence.
Right.
Okay. So one example of it. Okay, now we need to move on to what is perhaps the most interesting aspect of this. And I think so far, the alpha, the bravo, the delta, I think so far that is pretty intuitive. Mm-hmm. I think you read some of this. And again, this was, the alpha male concept has been around for a long time. The confidence men have used it in a certain way. We've got a little more detail now in thinking about bravos and deltas and being situational. But the guy who took this and added the following concept to it, I think really has given it legs beyond beyond just the confidence men. And this is Theodore Beale's the gamma male. And this is it. This is it's gotten a lot of play. The other word that gets thrown around a lot on the interwebs these days, and again into the mainstream world, is the incel, the involuntary celibate, the frustrated young man. But again, you know, how many of us never sat alone on a Friday night? Well, the true natural alphas never did, and if they did, they didn't worry about it.
Right.
But plenty of us have these kind of tendencies, and I'm actually going to read from Vox's original description of this: the gamma male, the introspective, the unusual, the unattractive, all too often the bitter. Gammas are often intelligent, usually unsuccessful with women, and not uncommonly all but invisible to them. The gamma alternates between placing women on pedestals and hating the entire sex. This mostly depends upon whether an attractive woman happened to notice his existence or not that day. Too introspective for their own good. Gammas are the men who obsess over individual women for extended periods of time and supply the ranks of stalkers, jealous ex-boyfriends, and the authors of excruciatingly romantic rhyming doggerel. Goes on from there. But I think that's wonderful. Especially if you're humble enough to recognize some of those tendencies in your younger self.
Yeah.
And maybe even your present self, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the introspection. We should add another thing. The gamma male is often a secret king. We're doing old movies. I talked about Jimmy Carter as the Delta. Well, Walter K. Mitty is the Gamma, the guy who lives. Did I? You don't know Walter?
I Walter don't. Mitty.
I always say K. Mitty because Danny Kaye played him in the movies in the 40s.
Oh,
it's too bad. It's by James Thurber, though, the Walter Mitty stuff, and so it's very good and very funny. And he's a guy who just daydreams. He lives in his head, and he's the hero of every one of his fantasies. And now here's another nerd fest. And again, if you know these references, right, we know you've got some gamma in you, right? Because my next reference is going to be Star Trek: The Next Generation. And Murdoch from the A-Team, you know that
yes.
actor? What's his name?
I don't remember.
We gotta look it up quick. Murdoch from the A-Team. Well, he was on Star Trek The Next Generation as a recurring character called, I'm only remembering his nickname now, called Broccoli. So now we gotta look it up. Murdoch from Howling Mad Murdoch, there he is. Okay, guy.
Dwight Schultz.
There you go, Dwight Schultz. And what did he play on? It's not Broccoli. Dwight Schultz on Star Trek. Barclay, B-A-R-C-L-A-Y. So Barclay, Jason, do you know about Star Trek The Next Generation?
Have you heard of this cult phenomenon? I've heard about it, yeah, but I haven't watched it.
Really? Oh, totally worth it. Totally holds up. I mean,
I've seen
1987 to 1994.
But that's
what did you do as a child? What did you watch on the TV? Did you not have TV as a child?
No, we had television. I don't remember watching a whole lot, unless it was, you know, with my folks. My dad always watched old westerns.
Well, those are pretty good. We could do this with Gunsmoke too, and Bonanza. Mm-hmm. We could do it with Bonanza especially. Well, I can't do anything about your wasted childhood. Most of our listeners will know exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about Barclay from the Enterprise, and he likewise lives in his fantasies. And there's a wonderful episode where they encounter Barclay in the holodeck. Now, Jason, as a person who's never heard of Star Trek, you are familiar with the holodeck, though, yes?
Yeah.
Tell us about it. What is the holodeck?
Well, isn't that where they get beamed? Or am I thinking of something else? I don't know.
You have to actually be from America. You can't live here and not have a basic familiarity with the parlance. You, in fact, wrote an essay about this, because you're although I'm coming off as nerdier than you today, you wrote an essay for Goddestines about how we all, the new canon that we all need to be familiar with includes Harry Potter.
Yeah. Well, I have read those. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, it includes Star Trek The Next Generation, so get with it.
Okay.
And so the holodeck is a live-action virtual reality. It's a room, but the computer, because, you know, they've mastered energy matter transfer there in Star Trek. Yeah. It makes a fantasy world. So it's not just, you know, it's not just VR goggles, but you actually walk in this world, touch things, and so forth. And they walk in on Barclay. And it's a kind of a Three Musketeers scene where he's impressing all the ladies on the starship, but in his fantasy world, and he's defeating, you know, the alpha male on the, the people who know Star Trek will know who the alpha male is. Do you know who the alpha male is in the Enterprise E?
Isn't it Picard?
No. But good guess. See, this is fascinating. So in the original Star Trek,
or is it
alpha
Worf?
Male? Oh my gosh! Alpha male. Just be quiet at this point. The original Star Trek. The alpha male.
Names at least
was
right?
Captain Kirk. The original was Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
But the fascinating thing that the choice that was made with Star Trek was to split the alphaness in two.
Oh, okay.
Right, and really to give most of the alphaness, the ladies man alphaness, all to Commander Riker.
Yeah, okay.
And to make a different kind of softer, gentler. Well, it's fascinating when you think about these things. So at any rate, there's a good example. Well, Harry Potter. Who's a gamma in Harry Potter?
Harry.
Oh, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, because he's always complaining.
Always complaining. Everything is like, always everybody else's fault.
Yes.
But yeah, so the Harry Potter books are a gamma world. They're a gamma reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry, now it's not as bad as it could be. Right. I was going to say, because Harry doesn't have to work for anything.
Right.
Now he kind of eventually does. Yeah. But, you know, if you sit down and think about it, everybody realizes how great he is just because they realize it. And again, J.K. Rowling is an excellent author. I think there's a whole lot good and interesting in those books. And I, mm-hmm. And also, you should be a part of the culture you live in and have some familiarity with the things people know about. But she's a very good writer. Yeah. A lot of good insights. Do you remember the ultimate alpha scene from the Harry Potter books? It involves asking someone to a dance.
Well, that's it's one of the twins. Is it Fred?
One of the Weasley twins, yes. Yeah. And they're in the midst of the common room, and the boys are all kind of huddled up in a group, and the girls are, you know, huddled on the other side of the room because it's this dance, you know, is coming up. And do you have a date? Do you ask somebody? I'm not going to so-and-so. And I think it's George.
Okay.
George or Fred. I think it's George.
They look alike.
And they're like, George, who are you going with? He's like, I'm going with Angelina. And they're like, have you asked her? And he's like, and he stands up and he says, oi, Angelina, want to go to the dance?
Yeah.
And of course, Angelina says, yes. Because, right, there's the perfect image of the alpha male.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, there's, Harry who... again, Harry's not drawn as the perfect stereotypical gamma.
I mean, that might be Snape. I mean, Snape was pretty gamma-ish.
Yeah, the guy who's right still carrying water for this ex-girlfriend who never liked him, was never actually his girlfriend. Yeah, yes. there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Okay, so now real life and how this might help you, and very specifically on being on a team. All this has been kind of bouncing around in my mind for several years. And again, I found it super helpful to understand and especially to learn more about the gamma stuff and see those tendencies. And in a minute, we're going to talk about biblical characters. We're going to talk about characters from literature, but we'll circle back to that. But I want to talk to you about the tennis team at Metro East Lutheran High School.
Okay.
So I coached the tennis team, and it was so amazing. I took the guys on a spring trip, and I just watched all this happen. So this is a great thing for, you know, pastors, if you have to, you know, lead the youth group trip or whatever, to just watch this. And so first of all, I've got just guys. And so this is great because, on this trip, because, you know, I can actually just see this hierarchy function with just the group of guys. And so here's how it functions. We're out and we're going to this, national forest. And there's this place to climb some rocks, and we get there and there's this really difficult kind of climb that really nobody should be attempting. But when we get there, there are two guys in their 20s, you know, up on the rock, and they're like, yeah, you can get up here. And immediately you see the hierarchy. Immediately.
Yeah.
All of our guys kind of step back and they start talking with you. I don't know. And one guy, the guy who is the absolute natural alpha, not self-aware at all, just starts climbing. And then, I mean, just up he goes. He gets stuck. He almost falls. I'm like, man, I'm just having visions of me having to get an ambulance to Shawnee National Forest. I mean, this is a disaster. Does not care. He's going to go. And he gets up at the top, and then he wants the guys all to take pictures of him so he can, you know, send it out to all the girls who follow him on Instagram that, you know, did this amazing thing. Totally without thinking. I mean, just, it was crazy. The next day, he's jumping off rocks into the water. This is March in Illinois. I mean, it's cold. Stripping down to his underwear, jumping off rocks. And once he did it,
other right, people
the next two, the next two Bravos follow. And then most of the guys are Deltas. They're like, yeah, that was cool. That I'm not going to do that. They're a little more self-aware. They're mm-hmm. thinking about what it feels like to break your ankle. so it is just fascinating. I think if guys read more about it, they'll find it useful. Again, with the caveats, mm-hmm. I think especially the caveat about the map not being the territory, because our audience of preachers you're going to tend to be introspective people.
Yeah.
And you're going to see plenty of those gamma tendencies within yourself. Well, good, right? Right. No, nobody's perfect, and self-deception is, being the hero of your own daydreams, and kind of retreating to those daydreams. Another gamma way of thinking is, if they only knew how smart I really was.
Mm-hmm.
If they only understood how, the gamma is resentful that other people don't follow him. Boy, there's a dangerous thing for a preacher to fall into. Yeah. You know, again, it's, you know, the Harry Potter's, everything's everybody else's fault, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a very long introduction and some analysis of this, but, I do think pretty much all knowledge like this is, we're going to find this in scripture, but scripture isn't analytical, right? Scripture just look at the difference between, even the book of Romans and the Augsburg Confession and then Pieper's Dogmatics, mm-hmm. right? There's, you know, the Bible, the way the Lord teaches us in scripture is not often very systematic in that way. I suspect this is because most healthy people don't learn best that way.
Yeah.
So likewise in the Bible, when it talks about human nature and teaches us about human nature, aside from, I think the book of Proverbs is the closest we get to kind of a systematic look at human folly. And maybe the book of Ecclesiastes, you know, the wisdom literature of the Bible. Okay, fair enough. I think if we dug hard enough, we'd find a lot of things that would fit this. But I think mainly the way the Bible teaches these kinds of things is through story and character. Mm-hmm. So, for example, so I'll start naming some characters and you tell me where you think they fall on the list.
Okay.
King David.
He's an alpha.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
Who's going to fight Goliath? What? Nobody's going to fight Goliath?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I'll do it. Right? 17, yeah. Ruddy and handsome. I'll do it. For crying out loud.
Not nearly as tall as Saul.
Yeah, and there we see, right? So where's Saul on this list?
He's a gamma.
You think? I think he's an alpha with some definite gamma character tendencies. Flaws. There's no doubt he's an alpha. How does an alpha react when another alpha, you know, tries to take his place?
Yeah.
Now,
but he didn't want to be there to begin with. He was hiding.
Was he hiding? You think that's for real? Well, this is fascinating. Maybe he was hiding for real. I'll have to think about that. Okay.
You think it was a show?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to be king. It's a thing in like every human culture. I mean, you know, the hiding king. I mean, this is the hiding bride and the hiding king. This is a thing.
Okay.
But anyway, but right there. So this again shows you, right, the map's not the territory. The Bible's teaching us through character. Maybe a lot of these characters aren't going to easily fit, just like you and I, we're real people. We're not going to easily, right, the map is not the territory.
Sure.
So that's good. Well, let's stick with this 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings kind of stuff. Jonathan.
He's a bravo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bravo to David. Support him, loves him.
Yeah, sees, even to his father.
Know. I mean, yeah.
in Saul's alpha times, I'd say he's alpha sometimes, but I think the way he reacts to David is more gamma.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Because an alpha doesn't care. Yeah. If does he?
Oh, no, but he does care. But he does care. If you come for his spot, he cares.
Okay.
Now, the most alpha reaction to that would be, well, let's have a duel. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's David, I'm going to kill you. So again, I think a lot of David's response, or excuse me, a lot of Saul's response is alpha. When he is openly against David, you know, declares him an outlaw, tries to chase him down and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
I think there we see, you know, that's what a king is supposed to do. But again, the map is not the territory. David himself. I mean, I think we can find plenty of times where David didn't act the alpha. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Amnon and Tamar. Let's talk about, you know, David and Solomon, because again, right. So here's where we can begin to see really the map is not the territory.
The map is
very flat. Mm-hmm. And once we get into the real world, it's way more complicated. We go to the New Testament. Peter, I think, is a good example of a guy who's, you know, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. Boy, there's your bravo. Right, mm-hmm. drawn the sword, ready to fight for his alpha, and yet, you know, in the book of Acts, he's got to find a way to lead the church.
Yeah,
he's got any and Boy, St. Paul, what a character.
Yeah.
Conniving alpha, is that a thing? Can we do? I mean, so again, you know, the map is not the territory, but in the Bible's teaching us a much more detailed and multi-layered information about human nature. But in some sense, that's why maps are so useful, right? Because they strip away so much of the detail. And okay, here's a basic insight. So in the same way that the Augsburg Confession Article 4, right, is just, I'm going to make it dead clear to you what justification is about. Now, the Book of Romans is absolutely sufficient for us to know about justification.
Right.
The Bible is absolutely sufficient for us to know what we need to know about human nature. But maps are really useful. They make things really clear. Yeah, all right. Well, that's what I have for you for those insights, and unless you have more questions you want to talk about.
So just in terms of application, though, maybe just a few minutes or 30 seconds on, like, getting the lay of the land when you're in these various situations. You've kind of touched upon it, but so what is the insight from just taking a look at the general lay of the land or the map to say, okay, do you go so far as to say, this is who I need to play, or this is who I need to be? Or do you also say, this is where I fit in here?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I think this is really helpful. This is great. It's great to understand stuff like this. When you think about raising your sons and learning their, I mean, I have four sons. They're all very, very different. At least the first three. The last one's a little young to know this perhaps, but the first three are all very different. I will be shocked if any two of them go into the same line of work, right? That you have Christian freedom to look at the what God has given you. And that's not just knowledge. It's not just skill. It is your personality. It is the roles you like playing, and say, one of my sons, for sure, I would never encourage you to go to the seminary. Mm-hmm. Never. Another one of our sons, we're planning to send this summer to do the, what's it called? The 2-week thing at Fort Wayne.
Christ Academy. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not convinced, but I can see, you know, the collection of talents and resources and tendencies that, okay, yeah, maybe a preacher would be a good fit for him. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Try to pick a role where you think you're going to be comfortable, but then you do have to understand you're going to be thrust into roles.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, the tropes of the World War II movies with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne come to the fore. You know, it's just a farmer from Iowa, but now he's, or even the modern one, Saving Private Ryan, right? There's a great little story arc in there where all the guys are trying to figure out what Captain Tom Hanks did before he became Captain Tom Hanks, right?
Yeah.
How did he become an officer? And they're all shocked to find out, you know, eventually that he's a school teacher. You know, he taught English. So again, this is an angle to help you operate with the doctrine of vocation. Mm-hmm. That you have a lot of Christian freedom in picking what you want to do. But when it gets down to brass tacks, so for example, you have Christian freedom, get married or don't. If you can live a chaste and decent life with not being married, well, actually, there are probably very few people who can do that. So maybe you don't have much of a choice.
Yeah.
But you have a choice about who you can marry.
Yeah.
But you get that choice once.
Yeah.
And then once you're married to her, then you have to say, okay, God has given me this wife. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 years before you married her, maybe you like Sally and Susie and you settled on Sally, and then Susie's in town for with her marketing company and she calls you two martinis in from the hotel bar. Don't go catch up with her, right? Because now God has given you a wife and it ain't her.
Yeah.
Right? So this is another angle of thinking through your vocation. Okay. I am a guy who is naturally, I want to be in charge. I want to be leading. I want people to give me acclamations. And you need to be, maybe you are a really natural alpha. Well, you need to be a little more self-aware and realize, you know, I'm actually just pastor of Wrath of God Lutheran Church in Podunk, Iowa. I'm not the district president.
Mm-hmm.
I do need to learn to play the Bravo role. I do need to learn to support my brothers in ministry. I do need to learn to not always be the center of attention.
Yeah.
Even within my congregation, I don't know everything. I need the trustees to make that call.
Yeah.
I need to listen to what the elders are telling me about this situation. So, again, I think this particular map can really help us with self-awareness, because it categorizes personality traits that tend to go together. Maybe that's the best way to talk about what this map does.
Yeah.
We could think of these as, you know, a Venn diagram or one of those kind of, you know, shaded drawings of, you know, where do your natural tendencies fall? And they're going to change with time. I mean, it's a rare, like I said, look, think of the tennis team, guys. There's exactly one guy who's a natural alpha. Everybody else who's 15, 16, 17 years old mm-hmm. is shy and discovering themselves and unsure of themselves, and they lack confidence. And the ones, especially the ones who tend to be intelligent, maybe they start to retreat into their daydreams, and, you know, those gamma tendencies are there for everybody. And so you could think of gamma as almost the natural state of the average 15-year-old, and that you and maybe especially plagues naturally intelligent boys, mm-hmm. and that you're going to have to, you know, find your way out of that. You're going to have to find your confidence. And the best way, of course, to find that confidence is to actually go about it, is to earn it by gaining that competence.
Yeah.
And so this is, well, I think your son had the class that I do at Wittenberg Academy, that where we use some of this stuff, our citizenship, mm-hmm. fitness and strength training class. And that's what we talked about, this, you know, that, yeah, you want to gain that confidence, but you need to earn it. And then that's how you actually become, Jimmy Stewart at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. where he's earned that competence. And, you know, the stereotypical, I just got one of your relatives' Christmas cards, that stereotypical vision at the end of the movie with the wife holding the baby and the two other kids, and everybody's staring up at Jimmy Stewart, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for. And you can fake that, and you can get the bimbo on your arm who's going to be giving you that look in the bar or on the beach, and, you know, you can pretend for that. But, you know, what a shadow of the real thing,
right?
You know, a fleeting shadow of the real thing. And so it has been fun to read some of these authors. It's been fascinating to see how many of them end up kind of turning toward Christianity. Mm-hmm. It's been fascinating to see which of them just fade away. It's been fascinating to see which of them just are shown to be true con men or truly crazy or a combination of both. Mm-hmm. But their insights, I think, have been super helpful for me understanding the ministry, for me helping raise kids, and really as just a bit of, this is what we're really talking about today, is really truly nitty gritty worldly wisdom to help you understand yourself. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of stuff that I think we're, is more classically taught on the bar stool than in the seminary, mm-hmm. and is correspondingly more useful.
Yeah. One final thing. Do you suggest any resources to dive into this more, or?
Yeah, I mean, so if you search, what would you search if you want to read? So what I read from, that is from, so if you searched Vox Day, VOXDAY, and his social, what is it?
Social Sexual Hierarchy.
There you go. So he's a guy who's you know, really, literally, right, drawn a map. I think that one is probably pretty useful. Again, a lot of these guys, you know, I don't read them in depth because I don't think they're worth reading in depth. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't really want to spend a lot of time with a lot of these individuals. but Vox's great summary, that is good. Oh, and he has a video series on YouTube that is hilarious.
Yeah.
So here we should find, if you're going to link to anything, I would link to that, because like his video on gammas, which includes references to movies in America, the country you live in.
You're like Revenge of the Nerds.
Exactly. Perhaps be useful. So yeah. So it's check out the socio-sexual hierarchy gamma. Okay. And that's a great video, and then that'll lead you to the rest of his, and that's a really, really fun introduction to these concepts, and again, I think they're pretty useful. Oh, he's got a great one on gamma fiction versus delta fiction.
Oh, right?
So what's you know, the daydream of the gamma, you know, Harry Potter, versus the daydream of the delta would be more. I guess we began with Peterson, we'll end with Peterson. Would be more the Batman, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna work really hard and do this, or maybe even Spider-Man, the working man's hero. I don't know. I don't do comic books.
Yeah, I don't either. But that probably didn't surprise you.
Well, not after I learned you've lived under a rock your whole life.
Well, you know, hey, we all have our tendencies.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your time, Heath. Appreciate the insights and the suggestions, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat again.
All right. Sounds great, Jason. Thanks a lot.